If you're like me, you probably find it almost impossible to imagine what it must be like to have to flee persecution in your home country and seek asylum elsewhere. And that is before we even start to consider the horrors that await you when you arrive in a country like Australia. Now imagine trying to do it as a person living with a disability. I genuinely can't comprehend it. It is, to me, unimaginable, and it's not surprising that people with disabilities who are seeking asylum are often referred to as forgotten refugees. Now, Professor Ron McCallum has dedicated much of his professional life to campaigning for greater recognition of the adversities faced by refugees with disabilities. This week, he'll be speaking at the 2017 Refugee Convention in conjunction with the release of The Legal Protection of Refugees with Disabilities, a book he's been working on with other legal experts outlining the plight that these people face. Professor, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick, and good morning, listeners. Yes, the book is written by myself, by my wife, who's also speaking at the Refugee Convention, Professor Mary Croc, and Professor Ben Saul, and Ms. Laura Smith-Khan.
Quite a lot of legal minds put together.
Well, we did research in six countries: Indonesia, Malaysia, Pakistan, Uganda, Jordan, and Turkey. And we wanted to bust some myths. You know, there was a myth, Nick, that, well, people with disabilities don't travel, so there wouldn't be any refugees with disabilities. But, of course, if you're being shot and you're persecuted, you're going to travel whether you have a disability or not. And we found that UNHCR, the body that registers refugees, often missed out on finding out that a person had a disability. If they couldn't see the disability, they didn't count it. We used questions, functional questions, saying things like, well, do you have any difficulty hearing? Do you have any difficulty seeing? Do you have any difficulty with mobility? And we found that the percentage of disabled refugees is about the same as in our current population, about 15%. And, of course, many refugees with disabilities have been through trauma, and many have cognitive issues such as post-traumatic stress, and they're not picked up unless you have careful questioning.
So is this sort of innate ableism that's causing these people to be even more invisible than we would have anticipated?
Oh, it's a whole lot of things, Nick. Some refugees with disabilities would like to be resettled in other countries, and they're very concerned that if they are seen to have a disability, other countries won't resettle them. For example, Australia doesn't resettle refugees with disabilities. The United States and New Zealand do. We settle a lot of refugees, but we don't take those with disabilities necessarily. So they hide it. Sometimes it's cultural. Sometimes they're just not aware that they're suffering from trauma. For example, we found in Malaysia, where you have many Rohingyas, 90,000, they said they only had 200 with disabilities. After we did our questioning of functional questions, we found that they had a similar percentage to everyone else, between 10 and 15%. Another issue, Nick, is that when refugees are not allowed to work, take, for example, Malaysia, Indonesia, they end up doing jobs that are dirty and dangerous. And so a number of refugees in that situation contract disabilities through workplace accidents.
So, that was really quite horrifying to hear.
Yes. Look, I'm sorry.
No, don't be. I understand that this is incredibly important. In terms of the legality of not settling refugees with disabilities, where does Australia stand? I mean, that just doesn't sound like it can be right to me.
We have health rules in our Migration Act about not letting people in who will medically cost Australian taxpayers a lot of money. And so even for people who aren't refugees, it's quite complex to get a person into Australia with a disability. And so we can pick and choose which refugees we resettle. And so we tend not to take refugees with disabilities.
That is absolutely remarkable to me. So what is happening on a global scale about getting these people better recognition, better legal status?
Well, the Women's Refugee Commission in New York, and I must say our research has added to it and played a significant role. Now the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees is engaged in more functional questioning and to try and find all the persons with disabilities. There are programs now operating in Jordan and to a lesser extent in Turkey. The Ugandan government are trying to do its bit. Another issue that particularly women with disabilities suffer is that they're at a greater risk of sexual assault. They're more vulnerable. And so one has to think about programs to keep particularly women and girls with disabilities safe. I mean, refugees without disabilities, women and girls are subject to sexual assault, and it's just much worse for women and girls who have disabilities.
Do we think that these sort of protections that are coming into play will be enough, and do we think the time frame will be enough to protect these people?
I hope that the protections that are coming into play will improve things, but we're just dealing with numbers. There are, 65 million refugees in the world?
Yes.
And they're increasing. And I don't mean to criticise the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. Registering all these people takes an enormous amount of time, and people can fall through the cracks. So I just think we have to keep in our minds that we need to protect refugees as much as possible. We're very good at, we take in quite a number in Australia. Is it 16,000? Our shortcoming is putting refugees on Manus Island and Nauru, but that's another matter, I guess. And some of those are refugees with disabilities.
Yes, this does not surprise me at all. Professor, we will have to leave it there, but thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Nick.